Friday. It could be a Monday, too. Oh, today's Chase Monday. And it's Chase week. Chasing every game this week after an 0 for last week. Chasing every game. Headlines brought to you by VenueKings.com. Monday Night Football tonight. We've got the Packers and the Lions. 5 o'clock right here on 950 KJR. Los Marineros in action. Still alive, folks. They're still alive. They are 4 out, 13 to play. Weirder and stranger things have happened. You never know. All right, they start a series with Oakland, 4 with them. Looking at the rest of the schedule, Yankees taking on the Cleveland. Rays host the Blue Jays. Strange things have happened. Puck to pick a recap coming up bottom of the hour. Also, we'll talk to Softy for a few minutes, get a recap of the Jimmy Lake press conference. We are broadcasting live from the Superior Linen Service Studios, fifth generation of family-owned laundry business since 1926. They specialize in hotel, hospitality, and medical linen. You can reach out to them at suplinen.com or give them a call, 253-383-2636. Big thanks to John McMasters for his $800 donation to raise our total, $22,800 for the Ronald McDonald House. Let's sneak in a little baseball talk real quick if we can. Ladies and gentlemen, from North Bend along the river, where he's got a line in the river right now and some rainbows are coming down. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Bucky Jacobson. Hello, sir.
Yep, get my line wet. Just figured I'd try to catch a little lunch here before or while I'm talking to you about the Mariners. Sounds like a good plan.
Hey,
what do you think?
When is the when is that run? Is it like now or was it 1st of October? What are we talking about here? When's the good
There's
time?
No run. There's no run
None
up
at
here
all.
Above the falls. No. I mean, there's fish. There's some fish, little tiny cutthroats. Right. There's a couple rainbows in here. But, no, ever since they dredged the falls and whatnot, there's really not a
Bummer.
Lot of fish up here. Yeah.
Is the is it a catch and release or you can keep them?
You can keep them if you want. I never do. I'm not a big fan of eating trout. Actually, I'm not a big fan of eating fish, period. So I do it for the sport.
Oh, I love it. That's good
stuff. I'm a big-time fisherman, but I don't eat them.
Do one on one of the days when you're doing the morning show, will you just throw a line in and see if you can catch something like on the show?
I could do that. It wouldn't take very long. I literally live right on the best fishing hole of the South Fork, I think. I mean, there's obviously other places, but I've got a nice little spot right here with a log. I can just flip a line in there and whoop. I mean,
God bless you.
The thing is, they're so small, and I don't have a real small fly rod. Like, my smallest one is a 6-weight, so it's for, like, good-sized trout. Mm-hmm. So the first time that I ever cast it into this river that I live on, I cast it in there, and all of a sudden I saw this little trout come up and slurp it and take it in his mouth, and I went to set the hook, and whoop, I flipped the fish right out of the water, like, onto the bank behind me. I'm like, well, that wasn't any fun.
Well, that's one way to catch it.
Yeah. It was about, I don't know, 5 inches long. So I took the hook out of his face because it didn't even stick in his lip. It was like stuck in his face and threw him back in and said, I'll catch you later.
You can hear the river run in the background. It's beautiful. I love it. All right, so we're winding down the season here. We probably got one or two more visits with you. They're 4 back with 13 to play. It's going to take a miracle for them to get in, but, I mean, it's sports. You never know what happens. I mean, we could have – Blue Jays could go into a collapse and the Yankees and all that, and you can handle business against the A's. I mean, you can take the A's out if you want and eliminate them yourself because you got 4-7 games remaining, 4 down there and then 3 when you come back home. The silver lining, the positive, right, Buck, has been the play here lately of Jared Kelnick, that he's showing you why he was so valuable to this organization, why they went out and acquired him, and why there's so much promise and hope for him in the future.
Yeah, he has. I mean, this is about the first time that I can remember, obviously, in the big leagues. It is the first time that he's gotten hot. We've got to see him, what he looks like when he's actually having ABs the way that he probably has been had ABs for his entire life, right? I mean, to come up earlier this year, I don't think he was really ready. I think that he thought pretty highly of himself. I got a little caught up in the Mather situation and all the hoopla surrounding that they were, you know, doing stuff with his service time, and he thought he was ready to go. So, I mean, that confidence is something that I want to have in all of our prospects and all of the players, period. But his borders on cockiness, which I'm okay with, again, even with cockiness on the baseball field, but I think he needed a little bit of humble pie, and he got it. He got a big dose of it really quick and in a hurry when he got up here, and so Then I think he started to think. He's young. And if you would have thrown me into the big leagues when I was 21, I would not have handled looking up at the scoreboard and seeing 150 or 140 up there either. I would have been pressing and trying to do too much. And I think he did that. I think that they've stuck with him and just kind of said whether it's good or bad that they've stuck with him during this playoff race, because he hasn't, you know, majority of this thing, he hasn't been playing very well. You know, he stuck it out, and he went and worked about it. I talked to Larry Stone when I was at that Griffey, or at the thing for the All-Star game at the Space Needle. I was talking to Larry Stone about it, and I said, the one thing about this kid that makes me still believe, even though he's hitting 160 at the time, is I think that he loves the work that goes into it. I mean, I played with bonus babies that struggled, and yet he's the type of guy that I think really loves working at his craft, and he has talent, right? There's raw talent there, and then if you combine that with a hard work, with a good work ethic, it's inevitable that he's going to end up being a good player, and I think right now we're just kind of seeing the tip of the iceberg as far as what he's capable of.
I think it's interesting you bring that up, because I think about this every time he hits a home run, and I don't, it's a small thing, and I think it's something that you would appreciate. He doesn't celebrate, and he runs as fast as he possibly can around the bases. Like, there is no trot to him. Like, when you watch him hit a home run, he gets around it fast. Head down, celebrates, slaps it, goes back to the dugout. Not that he doesn't show any emotion, but I agree with you. There is something about his personality that the putting in the work is not going to be a problem for him.
Right. Yeah, he definitely enjoys the playing the game, and I think that's part of what he enjoys playing the game. Well, the one thing that comes along with having fun playing baseball is success, right? And he's had success his entire life. I think the first dose of failure that he's had to experience, like real, true, you're failing right now at this job that you have, but this game that you enjoy playing so much, was this year. And so he had to kind of go through that. There's no substitute for that. You just have to kind of go through it, and you have to wear it, and you have to somehow figure out a way to come out the other side okay. And yet I think that you're right. I think that he works at it. I think he enjoys just the idea of being up there and playing. Now then he also buys into, he believes that he is going to be part of the savior of Mariner baseball, that when this team finally makes it to the playoffs and hopefully wins a World Series someday, he believes that he's going to be an integral part in that. And then when he's hitting 160 and he gets old opportunity after opportunity to be the guy, to be the dude to save everybody, to have the game-winning knock, and he would fail, I think that he just continued to put that pressure on himself. Now, the good thing is, I think that he understands your career is not going to be based on what your baseball card says this year. That's not your career. You're going to have multiple opportunities to prove what you're capable of, and you might as well just go about every at-bat that you have the rest of this season and try to up that number as much as you can. I mean, if he stays hot like this, he could end with, you know, somewhere in the 200s, which would be a monumental win for him as far as how bad he was and how poorly his season looked early on. So I think that I'm with you, man. I think that the guy doesn't have anything to worry about as long as he continues to work, and I don't think we have anything to worry about whether or not he will do the work.
I was going to ask you that. Is that important, because it's a numbers driven game? Is it important for him and his confidence next year that once this season is over, he looks at his stat line and sees that he's hitting over 200? Is there anything to that?
Well, there's something to it. He's never going to enjoy looking at that season, but he's going to know that whether or not it says 201 or whether or not it says 182 or whether or not it says 170. He's going to know the feeling that he had during this first call-up and what it felt like to go through that the trials and tribulations that came with it, and yet he's going to learn from it. I think he's already learning from it. Right now, I think we're witnessing some of those lessons that he's learned. He still has more lessons to learn. Mm-hmm. He's not out of the woods with this thing. It's not like, oh, it's clicked. Now this is it. We're going to see a guy hit 3 home runs every series. He's going to have more lessons that are fed to him, force-fed to him, unfortunately, and he's going to have to learn and grow from it. Now, I think that it would be nice for him to be able to have on the back of his baseball card 201 or 205, but it's not going to determine one bit what he does in the future. He's going to have to wear this one. He's going to have to kind of think about it, and I think he'll go home in the offseason and really feel like, wow, that wasn't all that enjoyable. You know, what I had dreamt about as far as my bursting onto the scene in the big leagues was nothing like what I just experienced. And so he's going to go put the work into where when he shows up to spring training next year, he's going to feel like that is all water under the bridge and he's ready to rock and roll and kind of start a new chapter.
I want to get to Logan Gilbert in just a quick second. I think they can do this. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know they're still in a playoff race. Should they give Julio a taste of the majors?
I would say no, but I mean, that's, I want to see the kid. And honestly, he's right? raking right now in double A. I mean, I want to see him, but I mean, I've seen it. I've seen it down in spring training. And what I've seen there is a bright sign in of the future. But right now, double A, we saw what happened. Now, Julio is outperforming anything that Evan White ever dreamt of doing at double A. But Evan White had a good year in double A before they jumped him up to the big leagues. And we've seen what happens to Evan White, or what has happened so far to Evan White as far as what he does at the plate. Mm-hmm. He's overmatched. And if you look at Julio Rodriguez's stats last winter when he went and played in the Dominican summer or winter league, I played in Dominican in winter. I played in Venezuela in the winter. Dominican, I think, is the best winter league baseball. It's the best thing besides the big leagues. There's the big leagues, there's Dominican and Venezuela, and then there's AAA. Those are both kind of 4A to me, and I think he hit .190 or something. And so to me, he still has some learning to do. I think that you let him finish this season on fire. I think he's hitting .370 or something in AA. Let him finish the season on fire. Maybe you send him to the Arizona Fall League. He comes in, he can go back home, he can get another taste of Dominican winter ball, which I'm sure that he will improve upon what he did last year. And then you come into spring training with the expectation that if this guy just shows up and just does what we've watched him do, that we're going to let him break with the team starting next year.
What's been the difference for Logan Gilbert in the four starts in September? I mean, he has been on fire. ERA of 2.01. He has given up 5 earned runs in 22 innings pitched.
Well, I think more than anything is he's figured out kind of that out pitch. I mean, that slider or curveball, whenever he throws one of those, a lot of times early when he was going, even when he was going well, he'd go 2 or 3 innings first time through the lineup, just kind of pounding them with fastballs and getting guys to chase that high fastball a little bit. But then all of a sudden, the second, third time through the lineup, he needed to rely on some other out pitch. And he wasn't throwing that thing for a strike. He'd get ahead 0-2 and then just throw a couple breaking balls that were easy to spit on. And now all of a sudden, he's 2-2, and he's like, okay, I don't want to go full count. Here comes another fastball. Boom, and they were squaring that thing up. I think that he's recognizing he's maturing as far as a pitcher and realizing I don't need to waste pitches. These guys, they're not like A-ball guys. They're not like college kids that I can just throw a hard breaking ball starting right down the middle and it bounces in front of the plate and they're going to move the bat very often. They'll spit on that thing and just take it easy breezy, no problem. I think that he's realizing he has to kind of make that a more susceptible pitch for them to swing at. He has to be able to locate a little bit better with his fastball, and he's doing both of those things the last month or so.
All right, enjoy the sound of the river. We appreciate it as always. Again, you can hear Buck every morning there with Chuck at 6 a.m., bright and early, 6 to 10, with the river running in the background. Buck, you appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Buck. Talk to you later.
Yep, there he is, Bucky Jacobson. Again, every single day, Monday through Friday, with Chuck. From 6 in the morning till 10 in the morning. And then we, and this train wreck, takes over. Talk a little baseball. 4 down, 13 to go. They are mathematically eliminated. They are, for all intent and purposes, out of this thing now. But, again, things can happen, weird things can happen, and maybe they get back into it. I would, that final series against the Angels, I'd bring them up. I'd give them a taste of it. I think he has deserved it. Now, Curtis, you bring up a good point. Do you let him go to Tacoma because they're in the playoffs? Well, maybe. I think Julio Rodriguez, I think you're disappointed next year if he's not in your starting lineup. I think the expectation is he's going to make that jump next season to break with the big league club. I think people are going to be a little disappointed if he's not, especially if what happens with Mitch Haniger. If you move on from Mitch Haniger, then – at some point, you got to put him in the lineup. I would give the fans a taste of him in that final, whether you want it to be the 3 games or the final homestand against Oakland and Anaheim. I'd reward him. I don't think you're going to kill his confidence at all to allow him to get some ABs and allow the fans, who most fans have not seen him play at all. I mean, right? I mean, most fans have not. I haven't seen him play in a baseball game. I've seen highlights of him. And he is murdering the ball at double A. I mean murdering it. I think his last was .370, as you just heard Bucky talk about it. He has just these absurd numbers that he's putting up down there. Like, I mean, it's not even having a good, you know, start to his double A season. He's just, I mean, it's remarkable what he's doing down there. So, I don't know, I'd give him a little bit of a taste of it. Get people excited for next year, because they're going to obviously need something to get excited for. I would expect him to be in the starting lineup next season when they break big league camp. But I would certainly let him have a taste in that final final homestand. All right, we got Puck to Picker recap coming up next segment. We got Softy to come on to recap with the what was said at the Jimmy Lake press conference. They're getting ready for Cal this week. They destroyed Arkansas State. We've talked a lot of football today. We've yet to touch in on the Pac-12 season. Do we give? Can I get the old school FSR, FSN music? God, I love it. I need a little Barry Tompkins, a little Petros in me. UW responded as expected over the weekend. Offense looked more explosive. Didn't have to do much against Arkansas, as we said. I mean, that team was going to come out and try to throw the ball on them, and it just was not going to be good there for the Red Wolves. They got right. What does it mean? I have no idea. Here's the one thing. You feel good that you got right. You won a game. You have no idea really what your team is until you face somebody that's actually good. Did they get that this week in Cal? Cal's not great. Cal's also not bad. But Cal has done something to you that there are a few teams in this conference that have success against Washington. They run the ball. They play good defense. Special teams is good, and they beat you. So you're going to learn a lot more about Washington starting this week at home against Cal. They're I think, a touchdown favorite. They got to go at Oregon State, who just boat raced the Vandals. Then they got UCLA. You're going to know a lot more about how this offense is in the next three games. They didn't play well this past weekend because John Donovan went to the booth. I think that's where he's right. He's changed where he went. That's not why they played. They played well because Arkansas State's bad. But we'll see how they respond this weekend. Wazoo, I was there. Yes, I was in a hotel. People keep texting me. Why were you in a hotel? I thought you swore off hotels. We said this. We booked it months ago. It's the only game we're doing a hotel in. The only game in Pullman we're doing a hotel in. And never again because it's just so much damn money. I can't remember the last time I've left a game with that much time left. 14 minutes and 30 seconds left that we walked out of there. Wazoo puked all over themselves. It led 14-0. Shoulda, coulda, would have been 21-0. Had Jackson not dropped a touchdown pass. But whatever. They go for it on fourth down. They don't get it. Right call. Right call to go for it on fourth. They just didn't get it. What I've just never seen a game as poorly coached with the quarterback decisions after that. I just don't know what they were doing. And I don't think anyone there knows what they were doing. Anyone. Jaden Delore gets hurt, and I don't know when Delore gets hurt. I think I know when he got hurt. I think he got hurt on the punt, and then that's just another boneheaded decision. Why is he punting? He's not a punter. If he got hurt on the punt, it's just when I guess it's creative, but it's 4th and 9. You have like this Australian rules guy that you went and plucked out of the backwoods. Have him punt and put it down there. It wasn't a bad punt, but if he really did injure his knee on the punt, that's just on you and the coaching staff. I mean, it's just idiotic. He gets hurt. No one knows about it. He comes out in a knee brace. My seats, you can see it right away that he's got a knee brace on. And he's not warming up. And when he's walking around, he's walking with his legs straight. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not good. And then the walk-on kid is warming up. And then I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why is he coming in? Like, he's the backup now? What I don't understand is the Gorontano kid, who was your starter, you named in the beginning of the season, who the only reason he came out of that game against Utah State is he got injured, and then Delore took over and looked better. And it always begged the question, why was Delore not the starter to begin the season? But if Gorontano was the guy and he came out because he was injured, you would assume he was the backup. When did he get beat out by the walk-on? Who, again, he's a walk-on quarterback. I know he's from here. If that's your backup quarterback, you're in big, big trouble. And I know that I feel bad saying that, but he's had two games he's come in, and it just looked really, really over his skis. So you have the third stringer, which he should be, the walk-on kid that comes over, the transfer from Tennessee. Cam Cooper has been there. Then it begs the question, if Cam Cooper's not the backup, then what the hell was he in the game in the first game against Utah State coming in the goal line package? Why? And I'm not exaggerating. When he went down, they had every quarterback on the sideline warming up in the game. including the Ward kid, who's a true freshman, who I thought at one point was coming into the game because he looked like he was warming up. They all were. No adjustments made. They literally run three plays on offense. That's it. They don't throw anything over the middle. They're poorly coached. They have been outscored. What's the stat? I had this stupid stat someplace, and I bookmarked it because it was so terrible. I mean, they have been outscored in the second half of these games in which they lead. It's an absurd amount. This isn't a talent issue, too. And I heard, and no disrespect to Abe Lucas and changing the culture. There was no culture to change. The culture was established already by the previous coach. He turned the culture from a loser to a perennial winner. There's no culture to change. Nick Rolovich walked into the best situation he could possibly ever walked into. Talent all over the football field. And a team that easily could win eight games. There's no heavy lifting like Mike Leach had to do when he took over for Paul Wolf. I have moved on from the should they fire him. My focus now is solely on who's the next head coach of the football team. That's all I care about now. Again, my pipe dream, my Hail Mary is Chris Peterson. You have to make the phone call to Chris Peterson. You must make the phone call to him. Is he likely going to turn you down? Probably. But it has to be made. And then you just go from there. I mean, I call the guy at Fresno State. Hell, I don't even know if that's even a better job now. I mean, it's the only thing you can hang your hat on to is that it's a Pac-12 job and maybe this guy wants to move up. But that guy in 2 years looks like he knows what he's doing over there. You have to start finding, that's all I'm thinking about, looking at all these other programs now, assistant coaches, anywhere. Who is the next coach of this team going to be? Because it's not going to be this guy. Regardless of what happens here in a few weeks, he is not the long-term answer over there, and it's obvious to everyone. Because here's this thing. Look at the stretch of games they got coming up. At Utah, at Cal, Oregon State at home, Stanford at home, BYU at home, who's undefeated against the conference. At ASU, at Oregon, Arizona, at UW. They have one win on that schedule, and that's Arizona at home. That's it. That's terrible. Pac-12 this season, 5 losses to the Mountain West, 3 to BYU, 2 losses to the FCS. All the momentum they thought they got from the Oregon win against Ohio State, gone. It's just gone. It's all flushed down. The toilet. We'll talk more Pac-12, a little bit of Pac-12 with Softy. He joins at 12:30 on Monday's recap with Jimmy Lake had to say. Also, Puck to Pick a recap.
Tune in today at 1:30 for Hardcore Football with Hugh Millen and Ian Furness on your home for the Huskies and the 12th man.